superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Every day starts with text messages. Alive? Question mark. Yep. And that's the only word that I need to hear, that they are alive.
The war in Ukraine may be halfway around the world, but among those affected are our neighbors.
I was shocked. I was worried. I wanted to be in Ukraine. I want to join the army.
We'll hear how they're coping and what it means for all of us. Plus, her music has been described as smooth country heartbreak and foot-stomping Americana blues. We'll catch up with Colleen Boss Mama Myrie. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The war in Ukraine touches nearly everyone on the planet, our region included, and not just in the skyrocketing pump prices at your local gas station. Not since the coldest days of the Cold War has there been so imminent a threat of global conflict. And even short of that, even the experts can't imagine a good ending to Russia's horrific incursion in Ukraine. Most shocking is the human and civilian toll, which touches our region as well, in a small but vibrant number of immigrants from Ukraine who still have family there and who are now our neighbors. I spoke with two of them, as well as a born and raised Twin Ports resident for whom the inspiring resilience of a people not bending to aggression has reawakened the pride of his Ukrainian ancestry. Here are those conversations, beginning with Igor Kolomitsyn of Duluth.
I was born and raised in Kyiv. I graduated from the university in Kyiv. I got my PhD. It's called National Technical University of Ukraine, Kyiv Polytechnic Institute. I've been here in the United States for a long time. And since I entered Duluth, I love the area. And I do what I love. It's organic chemistry and developing new materials currently to treat wastewater, mine water from different contaminants.
So bringing us to the present, before the invasion, there were a lot of warnings, particularly from President Biden, that this was going to happen. When you heard those warnings, how real did you think it was?
The war started February 20, 2014.
With Crimea.
With the Crimea, exactly. Ukrainians at the time decided not to engage, withdraw, tried to find a peaceful resolution. Ukrainians are peaceful people. They want to work. They want to make money like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Then the warning came. I had about 50%. It might happen, but I had 50% that maybe the world can intervene and stop it. Of course, didn't happen.
And so when it did happen, what was your reaction?
I was shocked. I was worried. I wanted to be in Ukraine. I wanted to join the army. I don't know if I'm a good candidate for it. I might not be the best. I reach out to my sister. I reach out to my families and friends. The first few days was extremely scary. The Ukrainian army did everything they could, and they're still holding. Putin's idea to take over Ukraine in one day failed. And I'm in communication with all my friends. I know a lot of information directly from the ground.
Mm-hmm. And have you lost anyone?
That's, you can say, luck. My family did not. We've been bombed when Putin failed to take over the Ukraine, when he experienced a lot of losses and resistance from Ukrainian people. He turned around and went bombing civilian populations. Maybe you heard it on the news, city called Borodyanka. People on the ground send me pictures. That's where my sister resides.
In what part of the country is that?
This is approximately 50 kilometers north from Kyiv. It's a line of attack. The Ukrainians still standing and they're pushing back. They're fighting.
I think what you're saying is this is an area the Russians want, but they haven't invaded it. Actually, the word invaded, that's part of the issue, right? Because to invade, you have to occupy and hold it, and that's not
right.
What the Russian army has been able to do. And that is one of the big questions, I understand, because to hold something, this is the lesson of Vietnam and Afghanistan by the Russians and Afghanistan by the United States. It's one thing to make the attack. It's another thing to keep the territory.
That's exactly right. And the city of Borodyanka was right in the line to attack Kyiv. Mm-hmm. And every attack was defended.
But that doesn't make life any easier for your relatives.
Let me give you another story. Last week, I received a text from my sister. Putin went after the civilian population. He literally launched ballistic missiles and bombs hitting Borodyanka in the middle. And I'm receiving text from my sister saying, two-bedroom apartment is gone.
Hmm.
And I want to ask more questions. She couldn't talk.
Right.
Luckily, nobody was home. And she's living outside of the city. She's just shocked. So I had to talk. We texted. We're using social media communications. Now it's not very stable, but we're still communicating and checking in every 2, 3, 4 hours, as fast as many times as we can. And what I told her, well, if the apartment is gone, that's okay. I mean, it's not okay as far as the war, but it's just a concrete.
Right.
We can rebuild it. The most precious thing is life, and I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad that your daughter is alive, my nephew is alive, and people of Ukraine are fighting hard.
What's the most important thing that people in the United States, but particularly in our area, because again, we are a bit insulated from the major areas. What's the most important thing for people in our area to know about what's going on?
This is not a local incident. The whole Europe is impacted and will be impacted even more. European Union's opened the borders for Ukrainians who are seeking to escape. That's the whole destabilization for the whole Europe. And of course, it's going to reach United States, whether we want it or not. Frankly, I was very amazed how many people in the area cares.
Mm-hmm.
In Duluth, in the Northland. Many people reach out to me. They talk to me. And that has been the hardest 13 days in my life. And I'm so glad to receive those support. To know that people are care here is phenomenal.
You aren't the only Ukrainian here. Do we have enough people to say we have a community, or how many others are there around here?
Oh, we have community here. Yeah, we have very small, maybe 20 people. My wife is Ukrainian, and every year when I can, before the COVID hit, I would spend maybe 4 weeks in Ukraine. I would deliver lectures about United States.
Did you talk about Duluth and Superior?
Absolutely. Always. I would always... You would be amazed how many questions I would receive about Duluth and pictures I would present. Sometimes since 2004, I estimated every year or every other year, I would deliver 3 to 4 presentations across the Ukraine. And students would come. They would ask questions about Duluth, Superior, the bridge, how I end up here, what's the people here like, what they're thinking, what they're eating, how they're living. It's phenomenal. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the last time I was able to travel was in 2019, just before the virus.
Right.
And now we have a war.
Obviously, your hope is for the war to end and the Russian soldiers to go home. But I don't know, any predictions? There's so many scenarios that are just... Even a victory isn't necessarily good. You know, we're dealing with one person, Putin, and whatever his understanding of reality is. And unfortunately, he's threatening to do some terrible things. He's already doing terrible things. He's threatening to do the most terrible thing, too.
Yes, he is. That's exactly right. I'm a really bad person to make any predictions. I know Ukrainian people will stand. They are standing. Day number 14, Ukrainians are still standing. That's the first thing to remember. I think the world has to unite and has to understand that that's not a local conflict. And the smart people out there who is making a decision, they have to make smart decision. I think that's how we should play it. The only hope here is the Ukrainians are still standing. They're between Europe and the evil. So they do need support. And I'm sure there are a lot of smart people who are making decisions, and they will do what is right.
Well, that is an optimistic note. So I think I want to stop right there. Again, offer prayers and everything else that we can.
Thank you, Robin. I really appreciate that you're reaching out.
That was Ukrainian immigrant Igor Kolomitsyn of Duluth. Another now longtime Duluthian born in Ukraine is Bogdana Krivogorsky, who shares her story with me as well. So tell us first about yourself.
I was born in Ukraine, and I lived in Western Ukraine, which is close to Carpathian Mountains, in an absolutely gorgeous, you know, medieval town called Kamianets-Podilsky, Kamianets-Podilsk in Ukrainian. Then my family is from Kyiv. Then I lived in Kyiv. And I came to United States in 1992 when Soviet Union broke down. I'm an American. I lived here more years than I lived back there. But, you know, your roots are where your roots are. So.
Of course. Now, did you come directly to Duluth?
No. I have a very colorful life, I guess. I first came to Phoenix, Arizona. Then I moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where I did my bachelor at the University of Wisconsin Madison. And then I moved to New York. I lived there for about 3 years. Then I moved to Baltimore, Maryland, where I was at Johns Hopkins University, where I met my husband. And he was working in the National Institute of Drug Abuse. He's a chemist, organic chemist. And he got a job here at UMD because I did my undergrad in Madison, Wisconsin. I fell in love with Midwest.
So we heard the warnings that this was going to happen. How real did you think this was?
It was very mixed reaction. On the one side, the history, when you look back, I believe that history repeats itself. And if you look at the history of Russia, the only way that it got territory is by taking somebody else's. I mean, if you look back, we're looking at Ukraine, who was fighting for independence in 1918. And we look at the Czech Republic and Hungary and parts of Romania on the Western Ukraine, you know, and up north from Finland. So you know that it's going to happen, especially from 2014, the war was going on for 8 years. Your brain says that it's going to happen sooner or later, but your heart, like, you still cannot believe it. The shock was the cruelty, the manner of the attack, the absolute disregard to any human life. How they did it, I think, was more shocking than that they did it.
And of course, how they're doing it is present tense, very much so.
Yes, it's very much. I mean, just the other day, they bombed a hospital with a maternity ward. And you see the pictures of those pregnant women. I have two kids. And this family of four, father, mother, and two kids, basically slaughtered. And all they tried to do is evacuate.
And you personally, do you have family there still?
Yes, I still have my biological dad is there, and obviously I grew up there, and we have pretty tight connections. So my friends, actually the friends that I met here in Duluth, who came here to study and went back, they're there. Fortunately, they were able to run away to Poland. So yes, absolutely. I have friends, family, very close connections. They came to visit me here in the United States, and it's heartbreaking.
Are they mostly in Western Ukraine, as you said? Or?
No, they're mostly in Kyiv. Majority of them left. Some of them stayed and joined the defense forces, which is every day starts with about, I don't know, 15, 20 text messages. Alive? Question mark. Yep. That's how the morning starts. And that's the only word that I need to hear, that they're alive.
What, if anything, can people here do?
I think the best way is... Unfortunately, United States did not open the refugee program for Ukraine.
You're saying we don't? Refugee program?
No, you don't. No, United States did not. No.
Oh.
I spoke with INS. The only way to bring refugees here is you have to apply for the tourist visa, and then once they're inside, to apply for the change of status.
So you're saying that even if I had an extra bedroom and I wanted to put somebody up, I can't do that?
You cannot. So you have to apply for the tourist visa. You have to prove your relationship with this person in Ukraine. You basically guarantee that they're going to return to Ukraine. Once they come here, you can apply for the change of status.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am ready to house somebody. I'm ready. There is orphanages that's been evacuated. I am ready to take somebody. As soon as this program opens, trust me, I'm going to be one of the first people to take people in. And it's incredible heart of the people in Duluth and Midwest. I have people calling me and saying, hey, we have an extra space. We can take somebody. What do we do?
You stand by and
you
until
stand
it happens.
By, yeah, right. until it happens.
Right. Other than that, what else most Americans, and particularly people in Duluth and Superior, you know, what else should they know about that they probably don't?
What a lot of people do not realize that this is not just another conflict. We have a bully. We have a big bully who pushed around, you know, Japan with Kuril Islands back, you know, back east. You have a bully who took a chunk of Georgia, you know, Republic of Georgia, not state of Georgia, Republic of Georgia. We have a big bully who thinks they can do anything. And I think right now this bully who bullied around the United States. I mean, it was not below Putin to get involved into the internal affairs of the United States of America. And we all know that. So this bully who thinks he can do anything in this world, he can just go and slaughter people, like literally slaughter, just bomb them. I think he needs to be stopped. And what they don't realize that he's not going to, if Ukraine is right now going to go under, history shows after Ukraine, there will be parts of Hungary. There will be parts of Poland. It happened in 1939.
I won't ask you for any predictions because none of us know. And frankly, even making them is depressing. But how about this? What's the most hopeful sign you've seen or that you hope to see?
I believe that this attack did something that no politician in the 30 plus years of independence of Ukraine was able to do. It's united the nation. The passion, the love for each other, the help, the ferocity with which Ukraine defends itself is over. I'm going to start crying right now. It's overwhelming. I am swelling with pride how people came together. My heart believes that Ukraine will prevail.
Bogdana, thank you for joining us in our prayers with your family.
Thank you so much. Can I say in Ukrainian, Slava Ukraini?
Sure.
Slava Ukraini, Heroim Slava. Glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes.
That was Bogdana Krivogorsky of Duluth. A longtime Superiorite, though born in Duluth, is Charlie Glazeman. His Ukrainian ancestry is distant, but rekindled by the recent events.
I'm Charlie Glazeman. I've been a Wisconsin resident for the past 22 years. I'm currently on the Douglas County Board of Supervisors. And I've been watching what's been going on in the Ukraine with renewed interest, to say the least. It was a few days after the invasion when I was listening to some interviews, and one of the people being interviewed from Ukraine was talking about some action that was going on around the Black Sea area, and all of a sudden something clicked. I recalled my grandfather, Harry Glazeman, was born in a small town around the Black Sea area, Berdichev. And he told the story of how my great-grandfather, a gentleman by the name of Mayor Glazeman, had emigrated to Duluth. And around that time, the Bolshevik Revolution occurred during World War I. And they had taken the older brother into the army, and we never heard from him again. By this time, my grandfather was in his mid-teens, I believe, and they came for him. And supposedly he and a friend had snuck out of the armory where they were being held. They ended up in Poland for about 2 or 3 years until my great-grandfather could get together the money to get them all here in the Twin Ports.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to not wanting to be part of the Russian army, there was another reason for your family to leave, which was anti-Semitism. correct?
Exactly. That was the reason my great-grandfather left to begin with, was because of the anti-Semitism that was pretty much endorsed and encouraged by the Tsar, blaming Jews and making them the scapegoats.
And they were violently attacked and murdered in
pogroms. The Cossacks would come through and just, you know, murder Jews indiscriminately.
Because of that, you know, it's ironic today that Ukraine has a Jewish president and prime minister. But had your family identified as Ukrainian? There's a certain streak that I'm seeing of Jewish people from the region who may have actually used the word Russian over the years because of the strong strain of anti-Semitism in Ukraine at the time.
Yeah, I would say we identified ourselves as coming from Russia.
How about today? Are we in a moment like John F. Kennedy in Berlin, Ich bin ein Berliner, where everyone is Ukrainian?
You know, I think so. I would hope so.
That was Charlie Glazeman of Superior. Coming up, she's a mix of foot-stomping Americana and Northern Blues, but you can call her Boss Mama.
I'm serious. I'm gonna make you, you mine.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Her music has been described as smooth country heartbreak to foot-stomping Americana blues and beyond. And her subject matter includes everything from horses to strippers to whiskey, maybe all three, delivered with a heartfelt passion and soul. And if you have to make comparisons, she's part Lucinda Williams and part Charlie Parr, but really all herself. Welcome to Simply Superior, Colleen Matry.
Thank you.
So I was quoting a bunch of different people there talking about you. Did we get it right?
Oh, that bio that you read with the horses and strippers. And those are like songs from like my past, but it still works. You know, I'm still songwriting, storytelling.
You know, if you got horses and strippers and whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to get rid of those.
Okay.
So part of it in that description is blues. Is that your major occupation, preoccupation, or how would you define yourself?
Well, you know, it's hard to pinpoint like what my genre is. I'm becoming more of a blues singer, I guess, but it's like a mixture of like traditional country blues, a lot of soul now because of the backup band that I have too. They're so good. But primarily, I would say, you know, country blues, soul.
Well, I'm going to elaborate on that theme and ask you what your blues name is. Now, this comes from Memphis Earlene Gray, who I actually know. I could say her real name, but it wouldn't be as much fun.
Well, my blues name, actually, my new stage name is Boss Mama.
Oh, okay. And where does that come from?
Back in the day, Tony Peterson used to play with me, and he's quite young, would always call me Boss. And so that kind of stuck. Other people call me that now too. And then my kids, my two boys, they call me Mama.
That would make sense, right?
And so I thought I wanted to try, because Colleen Myrie sometimes gets mispronounced, and I wanted to try, you know, a stage name. And I kicked it around for a while and asked other people's opinions about it. And I got some really good feedback about it. Like, yeah, man, that's, you know, because I'm going to be turning 52 now. And I feel like it gives me just kind of that's kind of like who I am.
Mm-hmm. Is that all there is to it, though? Because, okay, you know what? I'm going to finish this whole guide to the blues name. So the first name was a name of a disability or different ability. Then okay. The name of a fruit, and finally the name of a president. So mine is Blind Melon Washington.
Ooh.
The president's name was easy for me. And I was expecting a third name, like Boss Mama Myrie.
Yeah. I never knew there was a third name, but, you know, Boss Mama Myrie has a good ring to it.
It does. That came tripping me off the tongue, didn't it?
It does.
All right. So take us back to your early days. You did not come into this world singing the blues, I don't think, did you?
No, but I came into this world singing a lot of that traditional country. I grew up listening to records, and my mom and dad had musician family and friends that all was always at my house. The record player was always on, and I was my dad's personal DJ, you know.
And who were some of your influences then?
Oh, let's see. Hank Williams, Tanny Tucker, Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, Loretta Lynn. Jesse Coulter was a big one. And Johnny Cash, you know, Willie Nelson. And then my Auntie Oli, she was a piano, guitar, pedal steel player.
Auntie Oli? Isn't it supposed to be Uncle Oli?
Nope. They called her Oli. Her real name is Iola.
Okay.
She was a huge influence. She would cut our hair. And then I always asked her to play the piano afterwards and sing to me. I was like 6 years old, 7 years old. And then I had this small little organ that I would play around up in my bedroom. And my dad kind of noticed that I was always playing, and I was picking up songs that my auntie was playing. And we lived on a dairy farm, and he went and sold a cow and bought a piano for me when I was 9 years old for my 9th birthday. I didn't get off the piano for a long time. And then my mom and dad put me into like shows around town, like big 4th of July show, talent shows, you know.
This was in Minnesota or?
Yep, that's where I'm from, the Barnum area.
Okay.
There was like little talent shows all over, and I would be put into them.
Mm-hmm. What kind of music did Auntie Oli play?
Old timey honky tonk kind of stuff, you know, like In the Mood, Down Yonder. There was this song called Too Old to Cut the Mustard. Songs I've never, ever heard on a record player, you know. And then she was a fantastic yodeler. So she would do cowboy songs and yodel as well.
All right. Well, that definitely has to be influential. We're speaking to Colleen Myrie, a.k.a. Boss Mama. She will be appearing this Saturday, tomorrow, at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth for the first Duluth Songwriter Showcase. Why don't we hear something?
How about Slip Away is kind of a, people ask me to play that quite a bit off of my newest album.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about it.
My husband and I wrote that one together back in 2019. It's about your love leaving you. Yeah, they're slipping away.
Okay. Here is Slip Away by Colleen Myrie.
I'm walking down past the street, holds past the crowd, knowing you, thinking mine, looking for me, baby child. lost my baby child. Oh, 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 oh.
And that was Slip Away by Colleen Myrie, our guest, who will be appearing tomorrow, Saturday, at the Duluth Songwriter Showcase at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. So pick us up on your life story. Somewhere in here it transitions or gets influenced by the blues.
Well, I guess while I was growing up, then I would listen to a lot of Led Zeppelin, actually, which is very bluesy. And I think like most of the songs, like rock and roll and country, obviously are, you know, blues rooted. So I would listen to them. And then I discovered the Grateful Dead, which opened a whole nother genre of musicians out there. And then Greg Brown, I don't know if he's total blues, but and then a fella from Duluth came down, and his name was Charlie Parr, came down to Mattawa, Minnesota, and played at a small little tavern. And my husband and I went to see him play. And I think that was more where, you know, his country style blues influenced me a lot. Mm-hmm.
Not to mention his resonator guitar.
Right, right. And I think from then on, my husband went and made me a stomp box because I, you know, just like Charlie was, I was just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then, you know, the blues that I...
Well, back us up here. A stomp box?
Yeah, a stomp box. It's a box that my husband made out of a old box with a car speaker. I stomp my foot on it and it goes through the speakers and it has, you know, like a thud to it so that it has like a beat to your songs. Because I stomp my foot anyways when I play. It just gives it a nice deep thud and a nice percussion beat.
Well, if you're stomping your foot anyway, so yes. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be listening for that. And by the way, since I mentioned resonator guitar, showing how smart I am because I know what it is, that's only because Charlie Parr told me what it was.
Right.
And it has a metal plate on it that gives it, I don't want to say a tinny sound, but a resonating sound, a sound that amplifies it in the days really before amplifiers. So very unique, very Charlie Parr.
Very.
So what else do you have for us?
I think I sent you Sexy Laundry.
Well, we've got to talk about Sexy Laundry.
Well, I was folding laundry one morning. This is how it happens a lot, is I'll start singing a song in my head, like humming or, you know, vocalizing something. And it just popped into my head. And I was thinking about my husband. And I ran over to the piano and just started writing, you know, the chords. And then I went over to my guitar and did the same thing. And I wrote it down immediately. I didn't even have to change any words. It was supposed to be called I'm Serious until I was at a show and I told them the story about how I wrote this while I was folding my husband's underwear, is what I said. And some person yelled out in the crowd and said, Sexy Laundry. And I was like, that's the new name.
All right. Here is Sexy Laundry by Colleen Myrie.
Say my mind.
And that was Sexy Laundry by our guest, Colleen Myrie, also known as Boss Mama. So you were taking us a bit through your musical development and history. What about the instruments? So you played this piano that was, we know, worth one cow.
Right.
Where did you go on from there?
And then in my early 20s, my husband now, he wanted to learn how to play guitar. And so he would bring it over to the house and I'd watch him play. And then I got jealous and I was like, I want to learn how to play the guitar. In a month or so, I got a new guitar and I self-taught myself how to play. And then I went to my friend John, who is a really good guitar player, and he showed me some things. And I decided that I really wanted to become a songwriter. I bought myself a PA and then I started playing gigs. And I did mostly covers, you know, because I just started. And then now I do mostly my songs and do very little covers.
Mm-hmm. Where can we find more of your music?
If you go to like Amazon, or if you go to, I'm currently putting my stuff on Bandcamp. So it'll be Bandcamp under Clean Myrie, Boss Mama, CD Baby, Spotify, and all those others.
And a website of your own?
Yep, it's cleanmyrie.com. M as in mom, Y-H-R-E.
All right, we are speaking with singer-songwriter, blues lady, Boss Mama, Colleen Myrie. She'll be appearing at the Duluth Songwriter Showcase tomorrow, Saturday, March 12th, at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. How about one more song to take us out?
Sister's Revenge. It's kind of like a murder ballad.
Okay, you know, Danny Frank, who's going to be hosting the event tomorrow, started talking about murder ballads last week, and I cut him short because, you know, it's a family show here. Apparently it is a thing, huh?
Yeah, but you don't have to call it that. It's a revenge song.
Ah, I don't know why revenge strikes me as any better, but okay, yes.
Yeah, maybe not.
We've been speaking again with Colleen Myrie. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
Our regular colleague, Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune, is off today. So, Danny, you spent a good chunk of the day yesterday observing the Wisconsin Supreme Court as it listened to testimony in the dispute of who is or who should be head of the State Natural Resources Board.
Yeah, and as you might recall, this all stems from a lawsuit that was filed by Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call seeking to remove Dr. Fred Prehn, who was the former chair of the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. Fred Prehn's term expired last May in 2015. He was appointed by former Republican Governor Scott Walker to a six-year term. But last year, Governor Tony Evers, who is Democrat, appointed Sandy Noss and Sharon Adams to the board to fill vacancies left by members whose terms were expired. But his decision to remain on the board blocked Noss from taking a seat. And basically, Prehn is arguing that a 1964 Supreme Court ruling allows him to remain on the board until the Republican-controlled Senate confirms his replacement. And last fall, a Dane County judge ruled in favor of Prehn, and Call asked the state Supreme Court to hear the case. And so a majority of the arguments revolved around whether or not Prehn could remain in his seat, whether he could hold over in his position. You know, the Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General argued on behalf of Call that Prehn has no authority to be in office right now after his term expired. That created a vacancy on the board and allowed the governor to fill it. Prane's attorney basically disputed that fact, and conservative justices on the court seem to agree that there was nothing in state law that says that upon expiration of an appointed term, that a vacancy is created, allowing the governor to make such an appointment. And the Supreme Court's swing vote, Justice Brian Hagedorn, appeared to question the governor's authority to remove Prane, basically saying that early laws that were adopted gave the governor very limited power. And so if the court were to rule in Prane's favor, he could remain on the board for years. And a ruling is expected sometime at the end of the court's term, which wraps up in June.
All right. Also involving the Wisconsin Supreme Court, or at least a former justice of it, you told us last week about one of those members who's been challenging the 2020 election.
Right. Former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, who was the special counsel for a Republican-ordered investigation of the 2020 election in Wisconsin, recently signed a new contract with the Speaker of the State Assembly this week. And that was the same day that a judge ordered Gableman to turn over hundreds of pages of documents connected to that case. Now, with this new contract, that will run through April 30th of this year, allowing them to continue their work. But that work has come under a lot of criticism. Some of the documents that were released this week, there was a report out by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that many of the subpoenas that Gableman and his team had ordered were never actually sent out, including to an organization run by Facebook that provided funding to five of Wisconsin's largest cities. And that is what Gableman has targeted in his election probe, is that funding that he essentially said swayed the outcome of the election in Biden's favor. And Biden won the state by roughly around 21,000 votes back in November of 2020.
All right. Well, looking at both sides of the bay, quite literally, there was a summit this week about cleaning up the St. Louis River.
Yeah, the annual St. Louis River Summit was held, in which people were given an update on progress toward cleaning up the St. Louis River estuary. It's one of the most polluted hotspots on the Great Lakes that was first listed among 43 sites in the U.S. and Canada along the lakes back in the late 80s. And, you know, there was some discussion about how the infrastructure bill recently set aside $1 billion for the Great Lakes, which is expected to go towards cleaning up the most polluted sites, including the St. Louis River. There was some discussion that some projects they believe might be moving forward that otherwise would not have without funding, including work at the Munger Landing and also the U.S. Steel site on the Spirit Lake area of the river. And about $200 million has already been spent to clean up the St. Louis River. And they're hoping that, you know, with this new infusion of funding, that they'll be able to delist all of what they call beneficial use impairments, or, you know, ways in which you can't take advantage of the river for fishing or swimming or recreation, that sort of thing. They hope to be able to delist all of those sometime after 2025 and hopefully have the site delisted by 2030.
All right. And in another instance of cooperation between Minnesota and Wisconsin, the state's governors have some ideas about the federal gas tax, given the ban on Russian oil imports.
That's right. Yeah. After President Joe Biden announced that the U.S. would be banning Russian oil imports and really energy on Tuesday this week, Governor Tony Evers joins several governors, including Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, urging the U.S. Senate and House leaders to suspend the federal gas tax as gas prices climbed more than 50 cents in the last week. We've seen gas prices now, they are at least in Wisconsin, more than $4 a gallon on average. You know, oil prices have climbed to levels this week that we haven't seen since 2008. They've retreated somewhat. But now, you know, the governors have urged this move to relieve pressure on residents. Governor Tony Evers said that, you know, Wisconsinites can't wait for relief. They need help now. But even if that federal gas tax were removed, it would only save people on average about 18 cents per gallon. But that hasn't stopped the governors of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Colorado, New Mexico, and of course, Wisconsin and Minnesota from asking for some sort of relief for people as gas prices have climbed to record levels.
Right. And there is also news that some of the oil producers in the Gulf region may be upping production after all. But a warning to that is that gas prices traditionally do not fall as quickly as they rise. So we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Colleen Myrie, or Colleen Big Mama Myrie. I'm Robin Washington. And as always, stay safe, everyone.